Yeah, let's go. Get some.
Woo!
Come on. Let's go. A couple of white guys like us. How do we not get turnt for that?
You kidding me? This is the music of my people.
It's the crew, man. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Lieutenant Dan's Legs. If you're a longtime listener of the show, which most of you likely are, and we thank you for your continued support.
I expect everyone here is a longtime listener.
Yeah, ride or die, man. There is no middle ground when it comes to Lieutenant Dan's Legs. That's LDL, by the way. We're going to make some tanks.
LDL.
And some shorts, because if you don't have legs, you don't need pants. Am I right? Put that on a t-shirt.
That's right. Maybe we'll make those like zip off shorts, you know, so you can have
the option. I like, yeah. Where do you keep your pant legs if you zip those off? You got to throw those in a cargo pocket, maybe.
Right. But I feel like you only have zip off pants if they're already like cargo shorts, right?
I like the sweatpants that came with the snaps on the side. You know,
so you can just like fly them off.
Yeah, like NBA players in the 90s used to have, man. They had some flair back then. But yeah, if you're a longtime listener to the show, you know we kind of fiddled with the intro a couple of times. New one tonight in honor of the Netflix film The Crew. The Crew, that's a show starring Kevin James. Sorry. It's called The Dirt, which they didn't even really explain the meaning.
No, I didn't really get that one either. But, you know, I think it's the title of the book that this was originally based off of.
That's right. And it was written by every member of the band, according to the final credits. But it's The Dirt, a 2019 film, which kind of surprised me because, I don't know, the reason why I picked this film, and I keep calling it a film, it's a movie. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't call this a film, right?
I mean, like, you know, it's art, but like, what's the difference between a film and a movie?
Right. Sure. Like, if a little kid draws a hand turkey, sure, that's art, but you're not going to hang it up in a museum. So,
obviously.
Let's call it what it is. Right. But yeah, people were asking me if I've seen this movie, and they were talking to me about how crazy it was. And normally we seek out the worst movies of all time. But I don't know. This one just had a lot of buzz, and it's lasted for 2 years.
The people were talking about it. People were asking, you know.
The masses were clamoring
this movie
for The Dirt, man. And, you know, we're a men of our people, and we like to deliver. So had you seen this before recently?
I had not seen this. In fact, I actually hadn't even listened to Motley Crue prior to this movie.
Really? I mean, you had to have absorbed it kind of on the periphery of your life, right? Like,
I'd heard, like, it was like, you
like
know,
the song we
I,
just
I
heard, like the song we I just was, opened with, that was familiar to you, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no.
Okay.
It's like,
that's fair.
Like, I could like pick it out of like some like long faded since memory of my life, but I don't think that I was ever at point of a real crew head. I don't know what they call it, what the fans get called, but
I think they're called croutons.
Croutons. Yeah. I like croutons.
Yeah.
I was never a big crouton, you know, I enjoyed learning about the Motley Crue. I didn't know anything about them prior to this, and I feel like I know a lot more than I once did.
Yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. So let's get to know the cast. Someone, and this just kind of highlights how out of touch I am. I'm more familiar with the music of Motley Crue than I am someone like Machine Gun Kelly, who, as I learned after I watched the entire movie, played Tommy Lee. I'm really upset. I'm really upset about Machine Gun Kelly and his talent.
I don't have like a good visual image of Machine Gun Kelly. I also don't listen to Machine Gun Kelly. Like, I don't know people my age who are like, Machine Gun Kelly is like the rapper. Like, I feel like there's somewhere in between like you and me age-wise that's like,
yeah,
the MGK
we didn't have
fan.
To point that out, but yeah, there is
a gap. you know what I'm saying,
whatever,
but
okay, so cool. So I mean he is popular. I've definitely heard his name before. He has long dark hair in this movie, but I don't know. I don't think that's really an excuse for either one of us. But yeah, Machine Gun Kelly plays Tommy Lee. A man named Douglas Booth plays Nikki Six. He's vaguely familiar, but I didn't look up his IMDb. Nothing jumped out at me. Now, the guys who make up the rest of the band, they definitely jumped out to me. And I'm going to get this pronunciation wrong. Ewan Rheon played Mick Mars.
Of Game of Thrones frame.
Yes, Ramsay Bolton, dude.
Were you a Game of Thrones fan?
Huge. I mean, I love Game of Thrones. And I loved Ramsay. I mean, everyone hated Ramsay, but like he was more entertaining than Joffrey or any other like villain was.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, like I had the same relationship with Ramsay. I was a massive Game of Thrones fan as well, except for, you know, it sort of fell off a little bit at the end quite spectacularly, but yeah, I loved seeing him in this role because it's just like, it feels like such a different personality from what he plays on Ramsay.
Yes, and I enjoyed looking at his face, but he didn't really say a whole lot. I mean, he kind of plays, I guess Mick Mars is, you know, relatively older than all the other members of the band, and, you know, he's kind of suffering from a degenerative disease, which we'll get into here in a little bit. But, like, he's just sore and cranky the whole movie. He doesn't really talk a lot.
They kind of introduce him as a grumpy old man who isn't actually curmudgeon. That old. Yeah, no. They introduce him as a curmudgeon,
He's probably like 26, but to them, you know, he might as well be 100.
Exactly.
And playing Vince Neil is Daniel Weber, which have you seen the Hulu series 11/22/63?
I saw it a little while ago, so I didn't pick up on it at first, but now that you mention it, he did seem very familiar to me.
Yes, he plays Lee Harvey Oswald.
Mm.
And he was great in that show, and he's just an excellent actor. A lot of these guys... and by the way, Pete Davidson is the... represents the record label.
I actually, like, screamed when Pete Davidson walked into this movie. Just because, like, he was not, like... He was not the person that I was expecting to walk in as the nerd in the movie, but there he was.
Yeah. He's always goofy, but he wasn't the fucking cool guy, you know, with tattoos and an attitude like he normally is.
Yeah. Like you think of him on SNL, right? And you're like, he's probably like the coolest cast member on SNL right now. Right.
Yeah.
But like he walks into the Motley Crue and he might as well be like,
not compared to the crew.
Yeah, you might as well be the nerd from high school that gets stuffed in a locker every Tuesday.
And here's another pronunciation I didn't even bother to look up, but he's an excellent actor as well. David Costabile, does that sound right? He played Gale.
I'll take it.
He played Gale Bedeker in Breaking Bad. He's also Wags in Billions. So he plays the manager. Anyways, so the openings, it's a rock and roll movie. Okay,
to say the least, I think.
And, you know, it's not really about the music. I would say 90% of the movie takes place in some trashed hotel room. And the opening scene gets you ready. It tells you exactly what you're about to see. We see a woman kind of projectile squirt. A projectile orgasm is what it is. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
You've never seen that? Okay. I've never, like, I'm just going to be, I've never seen it. Like, I've never done that. Like, nothing ever done has resulted in that. Okay? Let's just be honest. And if my girlfriend's listening, she's saying amen right now. Mm-hmm. The only time I've seen that is there's this video on Twitter where this woman is getting a tattoo in or around that region. And I guess the vibration and the friction is getting her going. And she's a squirter.
Right.
And she like squirts the dude in the face. And like he kind of like he's sitting in like a rolling chair and he's pushed backward and he falls out of his chair. And she's
that's
just
some force.
And she's just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. But that's the only other time I've seen that.
I just have to say that there was some real power behind the squirt too. Like that thing had an arc.
Well, it's not even like, okay. So like you would think the initial squirt would be the strongest, right? No. Right. Yeah. Like you would think it's a buildup. First there's an explosion and then it tapers off. No, it kept getting stronger and further. It was truly impressive.
It was a sight to behold.
Yeah, and I hope you guys are all listening to us on the Orange Television Network's website that Syracuse University so proudly maintains. So,
and for those of you that for the unlucky few for who this is your first episode, I welcome you to the podcast.
Yeah, this you know what? To be honest, I think this is a great episode to start listening.
I mean, dive right in. I mean, that's what happened in this movie, right? I mean, we were gun started from the moment we pressed play. Like, I mean, there was limited exposition, to say
and,
the least.
And like that orgasm, this movie kept gaining strength. But before we can get there, we have to go back to the beginning for a little bit. And I thought this movie was interesting because you kind of get to know each character through alternating narrators.
Yeah.
So each member of the band kind of takes his turn to speak in the first person and tell his story. And probably the one who had the most interesting story was the guy who steers the ship, the bassist for Motley Crue, Nikki Sixx.
Yep.
And
he's the first character you meet.
He's the first character. He's the guy that it kind of seems like he's the head honcho.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could give him credit for starting the band, but he kind of looped everybody together.
It's certainly the impression you get.
And let's see, we meet this guy. I don't even know if we meet his original father. We meet some heavy.
We meet him via a phone call, and then
That's right. Okay, so the first man in his life that we're introduced to is a stepdad. So we know that his dad he's hit the streets. He's out of there.
Left for milk a while ago.
Yeah, and cigarettes. His mom has been banging around ever since. And it seems like, to me, it seems like an excellent recipe for success is you either have a deadbeat dad or a whore mother. Nikki Sixx had both.
He was destined to be great from the start. I mean, with that kind of upbringing?
I mean, you have to have some kind of chip on your shoulder. And like off the top of my head, I can only think of a couple of comedians that I like that share that same origin story, but it makes sense. Like it forces you to be special because your parents never thought you were special enough to stick around or, you know, take care of you the right way.
You know, and you had to find that unwanted, that wanted love and attention that you so desperately craved. So picked up a talent for Nikki Sixx. That was his base.
That was rock and roll. Let's see. So like, so Nikki, he is so miserable. As a child, he couldn't have been more than like 11, 12 years old.
I think he was 13 even.
13. Okay.
Yeah.
Cuts himself, in front of his mother.
It was pretty metal. I can't lie.
And what's the saying? Like, if you go across the vein, like side to side, like you're just craving attention along the vein, you know, you're going to get it done. He went along the vein.
And it was a deep cut too.
It was deep, dude.
I mean, like this is also like all within 5 minutes of the movie starting. Like I was like, what is happening? Like, how are we already here? There isn't even a, like, this is the exposition, right? Like, that's insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, so the squirting was phenomenal, but, like, I was like, okay, that's cute. And I'm thinking, like, man, I've had a couple of people tell me this movie is really out there, and, like, okay, we're getting an origin story. Like, okay, yeah, his dad's an asshole and his mom's a drunk, whatever. He starts cutting himself, and he calls the cops, and he tells the cops that it was his mom who did it. Gets her arrested. Holy fucking shit, dude.
This guy was a schemer from an early age.
That's some fucked up shit for a 13-year-old?
I mean, like,
how do you even cobble together that plan, man?
And it felt like almost spur of the moment, too, but I guess it wasn't. I mean, he had the knife under his bed. He was like, God, like, what a start to this movie.
Yeah, so. What a start. You fast forward a few years later, he's ready to change his name. His birth name was Frank, you know, named after his father, who we've never met. He goes to, where do you go to change your name? Is that like the DMV or something?
It looked like a courthouse he was at.
It's some sort of government building where you go to change your name, and he picks Nikki Sixx. So he gets his name legally changed. And the part that I loved, very symbolic, he's burning his driver's license in the building to symbolize that Frank is gone. He's no longer here. He's now officially reborn as Nikki Six.
I think my favorite moment about that whole scene were the like bystanders just sitting in chairs in the background waiting their turn, who couldn't decide whether or not to intervene or to leave him alone, because they were like, well, there's something burning here, but also he seems insane, and I don't think I want to get involved with that. No, it's kind of the dilemma everyone has on a New York City subway.
Dude, it's so crazy you mentioned that, and I don't want to derail, but like, you see so many videos of people getting their shit kicked on like a train or a subway, and the first thing you're going to do is take out your phone and film it, but once you post it to social media, every other comment is, hey, why is everybody just standing around with their phones? If I was there, things would have gone a lot differently. I would have stepped in and stopped that man. No, you wouldn't have, you fucking idiot. No one's going to get in the middle of a fist fight. Those people are crazy. Yeah. They're probably on drugs. Just film it from a safe distance.
If there's anything I've learned as a New Yorker born and raised, you see some crazy shit going on, you know what? That's none of your business.
What did it say? Well, business. If you do anything, you see something, you say something, right? Isn't that what they say on the subways? They're not.
Yeah, but that's if you see like a suspicious package, or someone's a terrorist.
But
if someone's just starting a fight, like, you know, just get clear out.
They're not asking you to be Bernie Getz and like go all vigilante on their asses. I don't think so. So the only other origin story that I wanted to hit on, Mick Mars, who is the lead guitarist, a.k.a. Ramsey Bolton, a.k.a. Ewan Rion, whatever. His name is Ramsey. He has a degenerative disease that really kind of puts a hitch in his giddy-up for most of the film. It's called ankylosing spondylitis, or as it's more...
I do want to clarify. I think that was spondylitis.
Spondylitis.
Oh, so very, very, very
okay. So this has nothing to do with the radical Islamic terrorist organization.
I was thinking more of a flower, but to each their own.
Okay. Well, I know it as boneitis, and we actually have some raw audio of Mr. Mars ultimately succumbing to boneitis. Jimmy, why don't you play that clip for us?
Oh my god, his boneitis!
I was so busy being an 80s guy, I forgot to cure it! My only regret is that I have boneitis!
He's tragic.
A tragedy of the commons.
Oh man, that was a lot longer than I thought it was, but it was.
The sound effects, they just kept coming.
Right? Oh, there was a lot of cracking, a lot of crunching of chicken bones. That was from an episode of Futurama, by the way. Mm.
Oh, good show.
It doesn't belong.
Doesn't belong in discussion in this podcast.
I thought it fit nicely. Okay, so we're finally introduced to Pete Davidson's character, who is an upstart executive at a record label, and he wants to sign his first band. And he tracks down the crew after catching them at a concert. And I guess they're at a place called like the Rainbow Bar and Grill.
Something like that.
Very interesting decor. It's like it's very dark. It's like the lights are red. The booths are red. It's like a blood red sort of joint. And
it's with the sort of satanic vibe the band's going for, you know?
Sure. And Pete Davidson takes a seat. And he's kind of startled, and he jumps back, and this woman kind of peeks from underneath the tablecloth, and wouldn't you know it, she's trying to give him oral sex. Mm. Just right there. Didn't matter who it was. There was a new body, a new pork sword to be suckled, and she was ready to go, but Pete wasn't having it. She retreats back underneath the table, never to resurface again, And I mean, you have no other option other than to believe that she's currently satisfying one of the other dude schools at the
table. You know what? She seems happy. I'm not going to critique a woman for finding her happy place.
Okay, but like if you're at a table and you know more than likely 99% chance that someone else is getting serviced underneath the table, like are you just going to keep eating breadsticks or what are you going to do?
I mean, okay, we're talking about me personally?
Yes.
Probably not, but like in the context of who this band is, I don't think it was any bit surprising.
Would you have accepted her offer? Keep in mind, this is like 1983, okay?
I probably would have to say no as well.
I don't believe you.
I mean, you know, saying it removed from the situation is very different than having the girl in front of you, you know? Because when I'm sitting here, I can think with my brain.
Sure.
I'm sitting there. And like your dick wants to do what it wants to do.
It's 2021. We're in the thick of Me Too. We know a lot about, like, sexually transmitted diseases. There's a lot of information out there that would lead you to say no. But I'm saying in 1983, Adam, yeah. How are you? You're 20?
Well, okay, 19. I see. I was thinking of the context of right now, right?
Right. And like, no, you can't do that.
In that context, I'd be like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know you. Like, I don't want to get AIDS. Please leave me alone.
AIDS was scary. AIDS was scary, but I think a lot of people thought you couldn't get that from a woman. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. There we go.
How about you? What would you say to the answer?
Me right now would say no. But right. if it was 1983 and I was, you know, talking to my favorite band, I would have a hard time saying no. I'd want to look cool.
Right.
I wouldn't do it because I like that kind of thing. I just, you know, peer pressure and shit.
Yeah, obviously. Obviously.
So Pete Davidson signs the group and their first big tour is opening for Ozzy Osbourne. And we meet Ozzy's character at a hotel pool, sunny outside. Ozzy comes walking out in what appears to be like a muumuu. He bends over and he has like a $20 bill tucked in between his butt cheeks. He's trying to get people to take it.
Uh-huh.
And this is really the first time we've had anyone try to tell the crew that like, hey gang, you only go around this crazy ride once, but you need to take it slow and steady. All right, so he's kind of coming off as the elder statesman, the voice of reason.
He does give some good advice, but in the process of giving that advice, he follows that up by asking for a straw. He wants to do a bump.
Yeah,
the band
sure.
Does not have any cocaine, so what are they going to do? Right,
which is, I mean, rare, like they're out of because
so Ozzy takes the straw, gets on the ground, mm-hmm. and I think he snorts a row of fire ants,
a trail of ants poolside. Because, I mean, if you don't have booger sugar, that's as close as you can come to that kind of rush.
Or so I've heard.
Fuck but, me, man. God.
You know, it kind of just invalidated everything he said before that point.
Yes. Immediately. I had never seen. And I mean, and this is the guy who, like, bit the head off of a bat on stage. So, like, we shouldn't expect any less. But seeing that, to me, that was more jarring than the projectile orgasm, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, my skin was definitely crawling. Ooh, a lot more.
Fuck, man.
But I will also say, though, that I had sort of been, you know, like I was in the movie at this point. So I was prepared for anything. The projectile vomiting, right? Like you're thrown into that. The mm-hmm. ants getting right. snorted up a straw. Like I'm prepared to see something crazy 40 minutes into this movie. And that's
sure.
what I got.
Sure, but once that gets going, I mean, it's not a slow build. He just keeps trying to one-up himself. I think he immediately pisses, not in the pool, but pool adjacent on the pavement, and then kneels down and licks it up, man. I mean, like, what are you trying to prove? You're already the Prince of Darkness. Like, you're supposed to be winding down.
Yeah.
The crew already worships you like a god. Like, this is unnecessary.
I almost like it both, like him doing that both invalidates his point about not going insane on tour, but it also validates it in a weird way where you're like, look at what I'm doing right now. don't get to the point where you're doing what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
I didn't think about it that way, but that, wow, that's oddly poetic.
I think I'm putting way too much profoundness onto that act by Ozzy.
No. I think you're onto something here because Nikki Sixx tries to do the same. You know, it's like, hey,
right,
I'm a rock and roller. I can do that. So he whips it out, starts bleeding the lizard on the sidewalk, and he's going to lick it up, but Ozzy won't let him. No, young man. No. Do as I say, not as I do. And then mm-hmm. he gets down and licks up Nikki's piss.
this was a movie like no other.
Yeah, it certainly was. And from there, you kind of go into a montage of crazy shit. And I kind of have a bullet list here. Would you like to hear?
Hit me.
Setting fires to hotel rooms.
Yep.
Bashing hallway lights with a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Mooning hotel lobby from the glass elevator.
Right.
Throwing TVs and other items of furniture from hotel windows onto cars on the street below.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing up on strippers. That happens a little later in the film.
Oh, yeah.
And as I mentioned, snorting cocaine just everywhere. Stripper's tits. Nikki actually snorts it from Tommy's fiance's ass.
Yep.
Which is no bueno. As soon as... immediately after that, Tommy Lee introduces that woman to his parents as his fiance, where his mother calls her a groupie.
Mm-hmm.
That did not
and
well
throughout all of this, the movie does note that the band has gone on to absurd success, mm-hmm. has gone platinum with their album, and has millions of sales and more money than they have any idea what to do with.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, they were, I don't know, they might have been the most popular band on the planet at the time. I mean, when I think about 80s rock and roll, I think about Poison. I think about like White Stripe and like, I don't know, some other bands that really kind of faded away, but I think Motley Crue really had some staying power.
To prove it to you, I've heard of Motley Crue. I've barely heard of the other two.
Yeah. Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Have you heard mm-hmm. of that? Did you watch Rock of Love with, Bret Michaels?
No, I haven't seen
anyways.
That.
Anyways, we're getting way off track here. So we're on the bus, and like, it's weird because, you know, my perception of Tommy Lee, I guess, mostly stems from the sex tape with Pamela Anderson and right. like him steering a boat with his gigantic hog. And I just would have expected him to be the partier in this movie. But really, mm-hmm. Tommy Lee was like a sweetheart.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know,
he was a romantic, didn't he?
He was like the only one that got married in the movie. Well, I guess that's not true. Vince Neil got married. That didn't last long, though.
No. No, but Tommy, we started the movie, and Tommy Lee was like, I'm a self-professed romantic. You know, he kept falling for girls, and you just wanted to find the one.
That's right. He just kept falling in love. You know, he introduces this girl to his parents, who he brings on tour. No one else wanted their parents anywhere near the band, but Tommy mm-hmm. Lee always had them around. Tommy Lee's mom calls the girl a groupie, which I don't know. She's from a South American country, I'm guessing, and wasn't familiar with the term, didn't know it had a negative connotation. And that mm-hmm. girl later on in the next scene calls Tommy's mom a cunt. And as big of a sweetheart as Tommy Lee is, call his mom a cunt, and he's going to fight back.
That's a line that you can't cross. I mean, you know, like, he had a positive relationship with his parents growing up. You know, like, you can't cross that line. We're not talking about Nikki Sixx over here. Mm-hmm. You called Nikki Sixx's mom a cunt, you're fine. You called Tommy Lee's mom a cunt, get out.
No way.
You know,
it's, I mean, not gonna, and like,
it's,
Nikki
it's Sixx, no bueno.
Nikki Sixx is, like, normally zonked out on heroin, probably to notice anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she keeps calling her a cunt, and Tommy Lee doesn't hold back, and he socks her, punches her in the face, kicks her off the tour bus, and You know, I will never advocate violence against women, never. And I think we should formally come out and say that the Lieutenant Dan's Legs podcast as a unit staunchly against domestic violence. Wouldn't you agree, Adam?
I would have to agree, and I'd also like to note that the use of the word cunt in the previous section was as a matter of quoting the movie, not so much of our own personal...
I had to look that up, and I was horrified when I learned what it meant. It's just an awfully ugly derogatory term, but and you use that to describe a man's mother? I'm not going to say he was justified, but I can understand the rage.
I empathize with his pain.
So she's out. So far, it's just been partying and chicks and drugs. And the movie kind of takes a dark turn when Vince Neil takes a buddy out to, I guess, go get more alcohol. Drunk behind the wheel. Mm-hmm. Swerves into oncoming traffic. Just a horrible accident. And a man nicknamed Razzle, which this is all based on true events, so this happened. He was a drummer for a band called Hanoi Rocks, which I've never heard of.
Nor had I.
He dies in the accident. And just, I mean, talk about a nightmare situation. Driving drunk. Someone's life lost at your hands. Other drivers injured, and what happens to Vince Neil? You would think, oh, he's out of the band forever. Like, his life is over.
Yep.
But Vince Neil spends 19 days in jail and gets out on $2 million bail, I guess is what it was.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I was slightly surprised that the base sentencing for vehicular manslaughter was 30 days. I feel like it should be a little bit higher than that.
I thought so too. Like, the narrator came on and it sounded like, here's Vince Neil in a courtroom, and it looked like real footage. And it's like, Vince Neil, lead singer for Motley Crue, sentenced to 30 days in jail. Like, it was a life sentence. I'm like, wait, you didn't just say that.
Yeah. That's not even a month.
And then the narrator says, but because he promised to stay sober, he was released in 19. And as soon as he meets up with the band again, they kind of play a trick on him, don't they? He thinks he's doing cocaine and he does smack. Do you know what smack is, Adam?
I am not familiar with smack.
I have no idea what smack is, but evidently you're not supposed to snort it.
The more you know.
Not supposed to snort ants either, but, you know, Ozzy was okay.
There's a lot going on in this movie that I don't think I would advise someone to do. So, you know, add it onto the list.
Yeah, and namely among them, it's Nikki Sixx battling his own demons, heroin. And at one point in the movie, we see Nikki injecting heroin directly into his neck.
As a person who's never injected a drug, much less heroin.
Oh, okay. I feel like, because you kind of seem like a heroin guy. I mean, you're slim.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's the sound of my voice, the look yeah. of my face, you know. Yeah.
You have this real rock and roll vibe to you. I'm sure people tell you that all the time.
Oh, I get that all the time. Mm-hmm, I want you to know. Mm-hmm. So as someone who frequents heroin, obviously, doing it into your neck, it's not the best way to do it.
It doesn't.
It's pretty dangerous, I do have to say.
Like, I think I've heard of people doing it, like, in between their toes and, like...
I have heard that, in fact, apparently it's to keep your arms clear.
So, right, you don't want the track marks.
Still do stuff with it, you know.
But you know what's more visible than your arm? Your fucking neck.
Yep.
Unless you plan on wearing a turtleneck all year round.
Which I do have to say wouldn't be out of character for
Nikki Sixx.
I mean, you know, if he just showed up and decided that he was going to just wear turtlenecks all the time, I mean, why not, right?
So we find out that Nikki Sixx does about $1,000 worth of heroin every day. And I crunched the numbers on this. $1,000 worth of heroin every day, that is $7,000 a week. Mm-hmm. Just about $30,000 a month.
Oh, okay.
And stick with me here.
Uh-huh.
$365,000 a year on heroin.
I might have to take out a calculator to check you on that one. I don't know. It sounds pretty suspicious to me.
Yeah, our loyal... What do we call our listeners? Do they have a nickname? We need to figure that out.
I don't want to say the Legless Dans.
The Legless Dans. Can we call them Bubbas?
Bubbas?
All the Bubbas out there?
I think the Bubbas were some pretty big fans. So yeah. I'll take Bubba.
We'll table it for later, but that is an option.
Yeah.
So heroin almost kills Nikki Six. In fact, I think the local news pronounced him dead. It was very eerie. He had his eyes wide open, his skin pale like a ghost and just not responsive. And they can't get a pulse from him in the ambulance, but there's one paramedic who just won't give up. And I love this because if a guy is seemingly dead, what wouldn't you try? I mean, you just basically throw the kitchen sink at the guy. It's a dead body.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like the worst, what's the worst is going to happen?
No.
Yeah. Like what's the worst is going to happen?
You're going to kill him more? Dead. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like they were taking this ambulance over to Quentin Tarantino's house. They start jamming needles of adrenaline into his heart. The first one doesn't do it, but the second one does. So it's really more impressive than the Uma Thurman scene in Pulp Fiction. And he rises from the dead. And I think at that point, or at some time soon after, Nikki Six decides to go sober. And he thinks it would be a great idea if the rest of the band went sober and invites them all to go to rehab with him. So It's kind of like an Almost Sunny episode where the gang goes to rehab.
The gang is going to rehab.
The gang goes to rehab, baby. Oh, if that wasn't an episode, it should have been.
I think it definitely should have been. I also do think it was the correct choice for the band in the long run.
I do think each one individually should have went to rehab, but like going together, I don't know if that would have worked.
Yeah, well, it ended up happening, and there they were.
They all went to rehab. I mean, the movie keeps getting darker. Vince Neil's daughter dies of cancer. That just ate me up inside. Like, I almost cried. Like, I'd never cried in any of the movies we'd seen up until this point. But Jesus Christ, did they... And I know it's based on true events, but holy fuck, man. That was...
Yeah, I was not prepared for the movie to take that dark of a turn. I mean, we'd been down a lot of twists and turns up to this point, but I mean, yeah, that was a pit.
Yeah, of everybody in the band, Vince Neil definitely dealt with the most horrible shit.
Yep.
Ultimately leaves the band. They bring on a new lead singer, and they're hardly selling any tickets. And the tickets they are selling, people are showing up, holding up signs saying, "Bring back Vince," which struck me as odd. Like, if you're going to spend the money on a concert, like, are you really going to spend the money on a ticket to just show up and boo? That part seemed a little weird to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, the band's not the same without Vince Neil. They ultimately have a come to Jesus moment together and say, "Hey, man, I don't care if we ever perform one other concert. It's just about us being together." And the movie ends with them getting all back together, evidently them performing another 20 years. And, that, my friends, I think closes the book on The Dirt, the Motley Crue story.
The Dirt. I have to say I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, I did too, man. I mean, I don't know.
Not in the way that, like, I feel like I say that a lot about most of the movies we watch, because I feel like a lot of the movies are bad enough to justify having, like, comedic elements, or, like, they're so bad that you're just, like, laughing at the absurdity of the movie. But this movie, like, I don't want to say it was like, I don't know if it really fit into the bad movie category per se. I don't think it was a good movie.
Right.
But it certainly had moments where I mean, Vince's kid dying from cancer. I was moved by that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I can say that for any of the other movies that I've watched on this podcast.
Yeah, and like we covered, I mean, it was just a stacked cast. You know, there really was no opportunity. I mean, they didn't really let Pete Davidson talk enough for us to make fun of it.
Yeah.
You can't really point at the acting and say it was bad. Machine Gun Kelly, you know, likable. Like, I hate him so much because not only is he, like, slim and attractive and a great singer, but he can fucking act and, you know.
Yep. Too much.
Not one person isn't supposed to have all the talents. Those are supposed to be sparsed out evenly. So I thought.
It's absurd.
All right. So your rating on this one.
I mean, out of 5 legs.
Mm-hmm. Which is still a stupid rating system, but I'm too lazy to change it.
I mean, in the context of like these bad movies we've seen, I feel like I have to give it at least 4 legs.
That's true. That's true. I think that's solid, man. And this might be a cop out, but I'm going to join you. It's not a perfect movie, but but if the rating system is uniform across all movies, it's probably,
which it obviously is, right? Because, you know, I'm keeping complete track of every single rating I've given to every single one of these movies.
Mm-hmm. And so are the Bubbas out there. They're keeping track at home. So is it the best movie ever? No. So it's not 5 legs. Is it better than any other movie we've seen? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So I would say so. I'd give it 4 legs too.
Yeah.
And I think we'll end it right there.
Yeah.
And we'll take
it from us.
Yeah, we'll take you home with a little Home Sweet Home. Have you heard of this one before, Adam?
I've heard of a lot of songs called Home Sweet Home, but I don't know if I've heard this particular one.
You've never heard this one. Wow. It's a pretty familiar piano riff, but that's okay.
I mean, it does sound extremely familiar, yes. I do have to say.
It's featured in Hot Tub Time Machine. Maybe we'll watch that sometime.
Maybe that's our next movie.
Yeah, neither of us knows which one we're going to watch next, but we hope to catch you guys next time. Thank you for listening to Lieutenant Dan's Legs. See you later.
See you later.
See you later. And I'm coming on this long and wide.